Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
How are you, Allison?
I'm pretty good. I feel like I'm starting to get used to just quarantine.
Yeah, I feel like this is the new normal.
Yep. It's like I only ever get to see my boyfriend and Jane and her roommate,
yep.
Michaela. That's it.
That's all. Those are the only people we see.
The only people I'm allowed to see. So it's pretty insane.
Yeah, and summer is here, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's super hot outside.
Today was 80 degrees.
Yeah.
So
it's like the hottest we've had so far.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure it'll still go back down to like 40 degrees one day because,
yeah,
like, it's spring. But, yeah, I've just been doing class and
yeah,
we really don't have very long left.
No, we don't. We have like
5 weeks.
Five weeks.
So 4 or 5. And then I have an interview tomorrow.
Where?
State Farm.
Oh, adult job.
Adult job. I know. I was like, man, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I applied today and I got a call and I have an interview tomorrow.
Like, is it like online?
It's like a phone interview. Yeah.
Those are so easy.
Yeah, exactly. So, tomorrow at 11 a.m., maybe I'll become an insurance representative. Wouldn't that be fun?
You literally just have to sound nice on the phone and pretend you know what you're talking about.
I know. The pay is pretty good. It's it's 40 hours a week, base plus commission.
Oh, very nice.
I don't know what the commission is, nor do I understand how you even get commission on insurance or why that's a thing, but I hope I get it.
Yes, I do too.
I would like to make commission on your insurance. We'll see. I have no idea what I want. I really just want to be like their secretary, but
yeah.
I can sell insurance too, I guess. So I'm going to do that. And then I found out also today through a Facebook post that I got Linda in Evil Dead the Musical.
That's amazing.
I know. I was like, that's really exciting. I did not think I was going to get Linda, but I found out that I did.
That's awesome.
Because I got tagged in a Facebook post that was like, here's the cast. I'm like, oh, hey, that's me. So hope that'll be in October, starting in August. So hopefully by then,
yeah,
it'll be completely good and we can start. I hope so.
Yeah, that'd be excellent.
I know. How are you?
I'm good. It's a little too hot for me, but I've been staying inside, so it's not too bad.
Yeah.
I've been watching lots of movies, doing homework. I watched The Roommate today, which we're going to do next week sometime.
Yes.
And, you know, it was wild. But it looks like I'm probably going to end up going to Minnesota State for grad school.
Always cool.
Which is going to be a lot better weather for me.
Yeah, unless COVID, you know, wipes out Minnesota. Because it's cold all the time.
Yeah, right?
Unless it never disappears. Yeah, that's really exciting. I can't believe it. That means we're going to have to go back to recording remotely forever.
Ugh.
Ugh.
I hate that.
I know. It's all right. We got a new setup. So we have a desktop now, computer.
We're not recording on a wicker basket
anymore. It's a desk. And it's still not the ideal desk, but one day... Actually, once we record remotely, it really won't matter because we'll only need to record one way. So it'll be good. Maybe we can finally figure out how to use a camera.
Yeah, that'd be, it's better seeing you.
Yeah, much better.
So maybe we don't talk over each other as much.
Yes.
That's always our problem.
I know.
Because I just can't see you when you're talking.
You know, Yeah, I mean, we still talk over each other, but that's how it
not
is.
Not as much.
So this week, we're doing The Revenant.
Yeah, it's a Western week.
It is a Western week. Yeah, on Patreon we'll be doing The Missing. This one is The Revenant.
2015.
It's, Leonardo DiCaprio, almost just said his. Leonardo DiCaprio's Best Oscar.
Best Actor Oscar.
Yep.
Tom Hardy's also in it.
Yes. Also that kid... who was in Bandersnatch.
Yeah, and he was in We're the Millers, and he was in Midsommar. He played Mark in Midsommar.
Yes, in Midsommar, he did. Yeah, I'll read you the plot. In late
1823,
Hugh Glass guides Captain Andrew Henry's trappers through territory of the present-day Dakotas. While he and his half-Pawnee son, Hawk, are hunting, the company's camp is attacked by an There it is.
Arikara.
Arikara war party seeking to recover their chief's abducted daughter, Powakwa. 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 There's no U. But.
Powakwa, I think.
I'm just used to always using a U sound after a Q.
Yeah.
Many of the trappers are killed during the fight, while the rest escape onto a boat. Guided by Glass, the survivors travel on foot to Fort Kiawa, as he believes traveling downriver will make them vulnerable. After docking, the crew stashes the pelts near the shore.
Glass is, like, a super good tracker, yes. And he knows, like, the land really well, and so everyone's, like, trying to listen to him because he knows the right ways to go.
Yeah, he lived with a Native American tribe, the Pawnee, right?
Yes.
He lived with the Pawnee for a long time.
And had his son. He was married to a Pawnee woman.
So he's aware of, like, how Native American tribes would, like, track them, mm-hmm. essentially. So he can, outmaneuver them, I guess.
Yeah.
While scouting game, Glass is attacked by a grizzly bear and left near death. Trapper John Fitzgerald, fearful of another Arikara attack, argues that the group must mercy kill Glass and keep moving. Fitzgerald! This is the first dick move.
Yeah, he's a dick.
He goes, let's just kill him. And everyone's like, whoa!
Whoa, dude.
We're not going to do that, okay? So, and argues that the group wants mercy kill Glass and keep moving. Henry agrees, so that's the captain, but is unable to pull the trigger. Instead, he offers money for someone to stay with Glass and bury him after his death. Which is arguably worse.
Yeah, kind of weird. You're letting, like, him suffer.
He's definitely going to die, but let's just...
Yeah, he doesn't pay even you have to any stay with hope him. That he's going to get better.
I know. It's like, well, what if he gets better? Which, as we all know,
he does.
But that's because he's fueled by revenge. When the only volunteers are Hawk and the young Jim Bridger, that's the guy from Midsummer.
Yeah.
Fitzgerald agrees to stay for money to recoup his losses from the abandoned pelts, even though they're supposed to go back and get the pelts.
Yeah.
But hey, Fitzgerald doesn't believe they will. After the others leave, Fitzgerald attempts to smother Glass, but is discovered by Hawk. He doesn't just immediately do this, by the way.
Yeah, they like, wander around and, like...
There are some days.
Yeah, there's some
days pass.
Listen, a lot of days pass between each big, moment in this film.
Everything takes a long time. Way longer than it maybe should, arguably.
I would argue
way longer than it should.
Some things should have been shorter, and some things should have just stayed the same length.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
But absolutely nothing should have been longer.
No.
Basically, Fitzgerald becomes, like, convinced that the Native American tribe is going to catch up to them. So he basically is like, blink if you want me to smother you. And he's just, like, holding his eyes open, and he's like, come on, blink if you want me to, and eventually he blinks.
Because he has to blink.
Because eventually you gotta blink.
He and just stares, like, at him until he blinks.
And he literally goes, oh, thank God, you get it. And then he starts to smother him, but Hawk, his son, comes back and basically he's like, nah. But.
Oof, this is brutal.
Fitzgerald, concerned that Hawk's loud reaction to him attempting to kill Glass will alert the... I'm going to say it wrong again, was it?
Arikara.
Jane's just going to say that word the whole episode. he stabs Hawk to death as Glass watches helplessly.
That's a brutal scene, though.
Also, saying that he's concerned that it's going to attract the Native Americans is... putting it nicely.
I think he's just racist and wants to kill the kid. It's very clear that he does not like the kid.
Yeah. Also, he literally, like, goes, What are you doing? And then he's like, stop, stab. It's literally, he, like, tries to explain it once. This is making it seem like it's like he has no choice. It's like, man, he had a choice.
He wanted to kill
him. He quickly chose. So, the next morning, Fitzgerald convinces Bridger, who is unaware of Hawk's murder, that the...
Arikara
are approaching and they must abandon Glass. Bridger protests at first, but ultimately follows Fitzgerald after the latter leaves Glass half-buried and alive in a makeshift grave.
He also leaves this canteen with him that he has kind of carved this spiral into.
Yes.
So he leaves him a canteen of water, and that'll come up later.
Yes. After they depart, Fitzgerald admits he lied about the Arikara approaching. When Fitzgerald and Bridger later meet Henry... Oh, Bridger freaks out, by the way. When Fitzgerald and Bridger later meet Henry at the fort, Fitzgerald tells him the glass died and Hawk vanished. Bridger is complicit in the lie about Glass' death, even though he knew nothing of Hawk's. Glass begins an arduous journey through the wilderness. He performs a crude self-surgery and eludes the pursuing Arikara by jumping into whitewater rapids. By the way, when he was gonna kill Glass, he was getting better. Like,
yeah, he was obviously improving.
He'd improved a lot. And honestly, by the time they left him for dead, he was, like, almost ready to walk.
Yeah, they could have made him, like, a crutch or something, and he would have been fine.
So, he has to sew up his neck.
And he cauterizes it, too.
Yes. Ooh, so bad. Bridger and Fitzgerald scout a pillaged village, Indian village. Bridger leaves some food behind for a lone survivor. Just to show us that Bridger's not racist.
Yeah.
Glass encounters Pawnee refugee Hickok, who says that revenge is in the creator's hands. The men share bison meat and travel together. As the storm approaches, Hickok constructs a makeshift sweat lodge for a feverish Glass to shelter him. After a hallucinogenic experience in the lodge, Glass emerges to discover his wounds healing and Hickok hanged by French hunters. Very sad.
Very sad whenever he's hung.
He infiltrates their camp and sees the leader raping Powakwa, the Native American chief's wife.
Yes.
Who they think the Americans took, but in reality, the French took her.
Mm-hmm.
But they're supposed to be allied. They're supposed to be allies, the French and this other Native American tribe. So he frees her, Glass does, kills several hunters, and recovers Hickok's horse as Powakwa, the wife, removes her rapist genitals, leaving Bridger's canteen behind. The next morning, Glass is ambushed by the Arikara and driven over a cliff on his horse. He survives the stormy night by eviscerating the horse and sheltering inside its carcass.
Very intense.
Very intense.
You also get to see a little peek of Leonardo DiCaprio's buttocks.
Oh, yeah. Just a little crack.
A little crack.
A frightened French survivor staggers into Fort Kiowa, and Bridger recognizes his canteen as Glass's due to the spiral symbol. Believing it was stolen, Henry organizes a search party.
Mm.
So they basically believe that Hawk must have taken the canteen, and then something happened to Hawk.
Yeah.
And they think Hawk is the person who, like, must have raided the French camp.
Mm-hmm.
But... believing it is stolen, so he organizes a search party. Fitzgerald, realizing Glass is alive, empties the outpost safe and flees. The search party finds the exhausted Glass. Furious, Henry orders Bridger arrested, but Glass vouches that Bridger wasn't present when Fitzgerald murdered Hawk, and was later deceived by the higher-ranking Fitzgerald.
This is when it starts getting really interesting.
Yes. Glass, which is, you know, only 3/4 of the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Glass and Henry set out in pursuit of Fitzgerald. After the two split up, Fitzgerald ambushes, kills, and scalps Henry. Messed up.
Yeah.
Glass uses Henry's corpse on his horse as a decoy and shoots Fitzgerald in the arm. He pursues Fitzgerald to a riverbank where they engage in a brutal fight. Glass is about to kill Fitzgerald but spots a band of Arikara downstream. He remembers Hickok's word and pushes Fitzgerald downstream into the hand of the Arikara. Elk Dog kills and scalps Fitzgerald, and the Arikara, having found Powakwa, spare Glass. Basically, she told them what happened.
Yeah, that near, he saved her, and so they spare him.
Yeah. Near death, Glass retreats into the mountains where he is visited by the spirit of his wife. End movie.
See, it doesn't sound very long on paper.
And yet, it's so long.
And tedious.
And long and boring.
Yeah, so I think this movie, it's very beautiful. The entire movie is gorgeous. It's very well acted.
Sure, but certainly not Leonardo DiCaprio's best.
Oh, no. Wolf of Wall Street exists.
Some Titanic, even.
Right?
Come on.
You're so attractive in that.
Oh, it is. It's a steamy movie, for sure.
Listen, that was like my sexual awakening. Listen, that car scene?
I know. It's hot.
It's hot.
It's hot.
I know, now I'm thinking about Titanic. We'll do Titanic on here sometime, but it's like 4 hours long, guys.
I know, it's like, it's a commitment.
We're gonna have to take a day to do it.
I know. It's like, I guess we did watch every single Twilight.
Yeah, but that seemed a little bit more rewarding.
Yeah, what's the fun of watching a good movie? That's so true. Twilight's such an experience.
It is. It's like a roller coaster.
But so long. Oh, it's so long. Like, there's a sequence where he's learning to walk.
And it takes, like, 25 minutes.
At least. And it's like, he can't walk, he can't walk, he can't walk. Okay, now he can walk. Oh, but now he's still struggling, and now he can run. And it's literally like, we just basically watch him struggle for 25 minutes, and then he's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like he's getting any better.
No. And also, the bear attack takes, like, 15 minutes, and I'm like, I get it, he's being attacked by a bear.
It kind of makes it not scary.
No, yeah, and it, like, at first you're like, oh, geez, like, that's so scary. And then you're like, oh, this has gone on for too long.
I want to also talk about the last scene where he walks off into the woods. So basically he walks off into the woods, sees his wife as a ghost, and then it goes black.
Well, and he looks at the camera
first. Oh, yeah. Looks at the camera because this director has to do that. And then it cuts to black, and he basically does a breath that, in my opinion, could be interpreted as a death rattle.
Yeah. I think that it could either be like, finally I've done what I wanted to do, or it could be like, I'm dying.
Kind of sounds like a death rattle. And he's in bad condition. But my thing is, he survived so much, and this is what he's going to die from?
Well, revenge is over, so he doesn't have anything keeping him going anymore.
It's true. He has nothing.
That's the only thing that was keeping him going.
So I was like, really? Really?
But remember, power ending. He's not afraid of dying. He done it already.
Yeah, I was just like, wow, this is exactly what I expected to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty predictable.
Yeah.
So my favorite part of the movie is like right whenever, probably whenever Pauqua cuts her rapist nuts off. That's pretty satisfying. Mm. And then they find the canteen, and that's pretty rewarding.
Yeah.
And then like whenever Fitzgerald finds out that Glass is alive.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
Basically, in my opinion, all of that to the start of the Fitzgerald Glass fight scene. Like, the personal fight scene.
Yeah.
Like, all the stuff where Henry's there and he's helping him fight, that's all really cool. Mm-hmm. Him dying is really sad. The little, like, trick he uses
is really interesting.
But then once it's just, like, them pursuing each other, it's such a boring fight. Yeah. It's like two guys just limping after each other, landing a couple of good hits every now and again.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it's realistic, I guess. That's like what a fight probably would be like.
In the snow and
it probably would be real.
1823, yeah.
But also, oh my god, it's a movie. Can we not do something? Something a little more interesting? That's what I feel about this movie. It's like, if this was gonna happen, like, this ridiculous scenario.
Yeah.
They wanted to make it, like, really realistic, but it's kind of a not realistic scenario. Like, the idea that someone's gonna be attacked by a bear, left for dead, mm-hmm. tried to be smothered, gets up, avenges his son, does all this stuff, that's, like, a crazy scenario.
Yeah.
And how did you make it so boring? Because you just made everything real. You were like, ah, but you see, he would have to cut open the horse to live. And you're like, ah, I don't care. Star Wars didn't make it fun. How did you mess it up?
A lot of things take, I think, longer than they need to be. Especially the scenes where he's learning to walk again, the bear attack. And then, you know, things don't even start to ramp up until, like, over halfway through the movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, we're, like, almost done.
Yeah, you're almost done by the time that, like, he comes to the encampment. And that's where things start.
And here's the thing, like, I enjoy a good slow burn film.
Yeah.
But I also feel like I want to be like learning through that whole process.
Yeah, you're not learning anything new about
him or anybody else. He has hardly any dialogue at all.
And it's they like keep doing these establishing shots of like how his wife died, but we know how his wife died within the first 30 minutes of the movie.
I know, so it's like it's not a puzzle. I know what happened.
Yeah.
It's like, you keep showing me that she was burned, and it's like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree.
I was like, that was the first shot of the movie.
Yeah.
First shot of the movie was showing us that his wife died. I don't need it anymore.
No. And they do that all the time. They do, like, they just keep repeating information over and over and over again. It's like, give us some new information.
I know. And it's like, also, I just don't care about these characters at all. The only person I cared about through the whole movie was Jim.
Yeah, I just didn't want Jim to die.
I didn't want things bad to happen to Jim, but once Jim was safe, I didn't care.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yes. I mean, that's really the only, and he's like the only character we really like flesh out.
Oh, yeah. At all. Because, you know, we understand that he's like, he's good friends with Hawk.
Yeah.
And like, we like really understand his idea of the
right and wrong.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. And his morality and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he's a very fleshed out character.
Yeah.
For being like a nothing character.
Yeah, literally. And also, in my opinion, his interactions with Fitzgerald, and I mean, I get that like, Glass can't talk because his throat was cut.
Mm-hmm.
But also, so boring.
Yeah, and Leonardo DiCaprio just never talks.
So boring to watch Leonardo DiCaprio grunt for 2.5 hours.
I would so much rather just see him fast talk as George Belfort in Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, this entire movie, I was just like, Wolf of Wall Street's so much better than this. I know. Why didn't he win the Oscar for that?
And you know what? This is such an Oscar movie.
Oh my God, it's such Oscar
where
movie.
It's like, can we go any slower?
Ford v. Ferrari.
Ford v. Ferrari. It's like, why? Why? We can't give it to an interesting movie that, like, does stuff. We have to give it to this movie that, like, tells a story that could be interesting, but, like, ultimately they're gonna make it, like, way too artsy.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, make it artsy, but could you, like, maybe also work on the writing?
Exactly, yeah.
I think the thing is that sometimes Oscar movies are too scared to write because they might say something that the Oscar committee doesn't like, and so if you just don't say anything at all, the Oscar committee is like, yes, 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 yeah. Beautiful, beautiful.
See, I think that two directors that don't do that very well are Taika Waititi and Quentin Tarantino. I think they both just don't give a shit.
Taika Waititi and Quentin Tarantino both have very talk-heavy movies.
Yes.
And, like, also they're kind of, like, whimsical. Which yeah. That's what it is. The Oscars hates whimsy.
That's so true.
It hates whimsy. And it's like, why? That's what people like. Wes Anderson literally exists on whimsy. His movies are not even that good, and people are like, but they're so fun.
They are, so, and they're fun to look at.
Yeah, it's like, they're good to look at, they're really pretty, and like, everything's weird, and people just like that. Wes Anderson movies make like, no sense. They have no plot, hardly at all, and it's like, so weird. They're just weird, the writing's awkward, but yeah. It's like, you don't care. Because everyone in it is so fun.
I love Moonrise Kingdom. That's such a good
movie. It's so fun.
It's so fun. It's so fun to watch.
What Wes Anderson films? What do they do? Like,
yeah, they don't do anything.
It's just people talking weird to each other for like
yeah.
2 hours. And then you're like, oh, wow, I'm changed. And it's like, we didn't learn anything. Except The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I love that movie.
That movie's really good.
That movie's gorgeous.
Yeah. Wes Anderson films do a lot of the no talking stuff sometimes. Like, they have several movies which are like not dialogue heavy at all, kind of like this, but he made it whimsical, and that's why they don't like him.
Yeah, they don't like whimsy, they like grit.
Yeah, you know, it's like, that's boring, it's been done. Everything's gritty. Okay, The Godfather. I love that movie. I think it's such a good movie, but also, it's just a movie where like, it's just people talking. You guys like plays.
Yeah.
The Oscar committee likes plays. They should go be on the Tony committee. Because this is like, it's a movie. Why? I don't want to see this. This isn't the prettiest. I mean, it's a pretty movie. But it's not like it's the prettiest movie ever made.
Yeah, true.
It's not like, it's got good acting, but it's like the best acting I've ever seen.
I've seen Leonardo DiCaprio do so much better in so many movies.
Oh my God, yes.
His first, What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
So good.
So good.
Leonardo DiCaprio is pretty much, I mean, it's like Leonardo DiCaprio did fine in this movie, but it's like,
I don't think he's done bad in any movie.
I think Leonardo DiCaprio, they literally gave this to him because they were like, wow, look at all the cool stuff he did. And you're like, is that acting? Not really. I don't like how the Oscars is like, we're going to give actors points for doing real things. And yeah. You're like, but acting.
Yeah, listen, he didn't really do drugs in Wolf of Wall Street.
It's like, wow, maybe if he had done 4 pounds of cocaine, I would have given it to him, but he's faking the coke, and you're like, yeah, he's an actor?
He can't perform on cocaine.
But we wanted him to actually eat raw buffalo, or bison.
Bison.
And we did make him eat it. And it's like, wow, Oscar.
Also, he's a vegetarian.
I know. Yeah, what the hell? They were literally just like, oh, this will be fun.
Oof. He said he would never, ever, ever do that again.
He threw up.
Yeah.
In the movie.
In the movie he threw up.
In the movie he throws up. I bet that was real.
Yeah.
They're like, wow, yay, yay, Leonardo DiCaprio having to sacrifice his happiness so that we could watch him in a tiny scene. And it's like, that's Oscar worthy. And you're like, no, it's not. You know what would be? Eating fake buffalo and doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It's literally called acting. I literally, it's literally the award for best actor. And they're like, well, we want you to do real stuff. It's like, you just want a stuntman. Yeah, they won't give stuntmen
awards. Even a category.
I know. They're like, no stunt category, but we want, but we're going to give you an Oscar if you do your own stunts because it's cool. And you're like, well, what about all the people that actually do the stunts?
Yeah, what about all the real people who put their lives at risk to do these stunts?
I don't care. Wow, Tom Cruise.
You know, that's a really great part about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is like about the, how underprivileged stunt people are.
I know. They don't aren't paid well either.
No.
I literally don't understand why anyone would ever be a stunt person.
No.
You don't make good money. Nobody knows who you are. Mm-hmm. You, like, people do not care about you.
Yeah.
They literally don't even care about your lives.
The only stunt woman that I'm aware of is, like, that I know as an actor or actress is Uma Thurman's stunt double.
Yeah.
Because she was in a Quentin Tarantino movie. She's been in two Quentin Tarantino movies as an actress and a stunt woman.
Yeah. I watched a video recently with the woman who is Scarlett Johansson's stunt double in all the Avenger movies.
Oh, nice.
And it's really interesting. She was like, it was really interesting because, like, I always see videos with, like, stunt men, but I never really see them with stunt women. And it's really interesting if you think about it because a lot of times, like, stunt men will have, like, really padded suits, but, like, stunt women can't have that.
No, because they're, like, form-fitting clothing.
Clothing, exactly. And so it's, like, literally them jumping out of, like, a car, moving at, like, 40 miles per hour, wearing, like, a bra. And it's, like, and it's real, and you're, like, you make not, like, you make so little for what you do.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, anybody else would ever do that.
Yeah. There's this scene in this great movie that I want to show you called Death Proof. Mm-hmm. It's very early Tarantino. But it was with the stunt woman that I was talking about, Uma Thurman's in Kill Bill.
Yeah.
She does this scene where she gets on top of, like, the car hood, and they go, like, 150 miles an hour. And it's, like, terrifying. And that just gave me so much respect for stunt people because that's crazy.
When I was watching that video, they were basically, it was stunt woman reacting to stunts. And there was one where, like, a girl, it was, like, showing the bloopers where she was supposed to, like, get hit by a car and the windshield was supposed to shatter so she'd fall into the car.
Yeah.
But the windshield didn't shatter. And she just fell off the car.
Oh, my God.
And, like, Jackie Chan, because he does his own stunts, was, like, driving the car. And he, like, freaking halts. He, like, and everyone, like, jumps out and starts running towards her. And she was obviously fine. But, but also, like, for example, Daniel Radcliffe, stunt person for Harry Potter, was paralyzed when they were shooting one of the Quidditch scenes.
Really?
Yeah, he fell off and broke his neck. And it is paralyzed from the neck down forever.
That's terrible. And it's like,
and like, the only reason I know about that is because Daniel Radcliffe, after that, became like a big advocate for stunt people. Because, and like, I'm pretty sure he like financially takes care of him now.
Gotcha.
But like, that's such a, it's like, that could happen.
Yeah, that could happen to any stunt double.
Any stunt double, and they're literally like,
pay nothing.
Nothing.
Like, no, that whole scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where he goes from Rick's house to his own house.
His trailer.
To his trailer, you're like, what the fuck?
I know. And I mean, of course it's like older, so they're probably paid a little better because they probably have like a union, but they definitely don't get any appreciation.
No, and they don't even get a like a category at the Oscars, which they totally should.
I know. Especially, it's weird to me that they don't when it's like people idolize like Tom Cruise and stuff for doing his own stunts.
Exactly.
And it's like, yeah, that's impressive, but there are people who literally just do that.
For a living. Like, and they do way cooler stuff.
Yeah, and it's not like Tom Cruise, like, it's good for him, but it's like, how are you going to be like, wow, that's the whole reason we, like, idolize Tom Cruise is because he can do his own stunts, but you, like, don't care at all about people that are actually stunt doubles?
Oh, he can act and do stunts?
It's like, probably so can the stunt double.
I mean, obviously they can.
Yeah. Also, you have to, like, you kind of have to.
Yeah, right?
I mean,
at least physical acting.
Yeah, not every stunt is done with your back turned.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, they can definitely physically act, and they can somewhat use their faces if it's a far enough away shot. I also learned recently about this thing called photo doubles, which are for, like, I learned about this because of Game of Thrones, actually, which are people that look almost, like, photo identical to, like, celebrities who are hired to basically do large crowd shots or chorus scenes for them, mm-hmm. so they don't have to pay the person who gets paid a lot to be there for, like, when they're not talking.
Wow.
So, like, for example, Sansa Stark's in Game of Thrones, her photo double, like, almost everything in the crowd, it's always her photo double. Mm-hmm. You just can't tell because they look almost identical. But they also get paid, like, nothing.
That sucks.
Everyone in Hollywood that's not a star basically is paid, like, almost nothing.
Ugh.
I know.
Woof.
Woof. It's literally like, you don't make anything. It's funny because in the theater, it's like the opposite. If you're like anything besides an actor, you get paid way more than the actors.
Uh-huh.
But in Hollywood, it's like the opposite. It's like, oh, you're not the actor or director. You're making nothing.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just because in the theater, the unions are really good.
Gotcha.
For, like, the Actors Equity Union kind of, like, it's fine. It's a good union. But comparatively to the other unions, mm-hmm. it's, like, not as good.
Gotcha. Interesting.
There's also no director's union at all in theater.
Really?
No union for directors.
Wow. Do you want some facts?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. There's a lot on this. So due to production, this is all from IMDb.
Okay.
Due to production being behind schedule, the snow melted during the location shoot in Canada before filming was complete. With summer rapidly approaching, there was no choice but to relocate the entire production to southern Argentina, where there were similar wintry conditions. Leonardo DiCaprio chose to devour a raw slab of bison's liver, even though he is a vegetarian. Why? I think he was pressured.
Why?
He also had to learn to shoot a musket, build a fire, speak two Native American languages, including Pawnee and Arikara, and study with a doctor who specializes in ancient healing techniques. Don't know why he had to do that.
Leonardo DiCaprio, you have to learn about the ancient healing techniques. Not us, not the people that are going to put this shit together. You specifically need to learn about it.
He said it was the hardest performance of his career. I mean, physically, yeah.
Somebody was like, listen, Leo, you want that Oscar? You want that Oscar? You gotta do this movie.
Gotta be quicker than that.
And he did it.
He did it. This movie was shot chronologically.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. Over an 80-day schedule.
That's why your snow melted.
Yeah. Shot only with natural light.
Okay.
Which is kind of impressive.
Yeah.
No computer-generated imagery.
What?
To be used to enhance the film.
The bear?
The bear would have to be.
That bear was not a real bear at all. It didn't even look real.
No. I don't know why that's on there.
I don't believe that at all. That's not true. I mean, maybe they didn't enhance the scenery. Like, maybe they didn't add in trees and stuff, but that bear is definitely not real.
Tom Hardy has stated that he does not read scripts. At one time, he was due to star in Splinter Cell. He wanted to play a soldier in that film, but Leonardo DiCaprio begged him to read the script for this movie. Hardy read half of it and accepted the role.
Aw. Wow, Hardy. That was maybe a mistake.
He doesn't
read it? He's just like, yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, sounds fine. Hugh Glass did not have a son, and there is no record that he was ever married.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy had to quit Suicide Squad to be in this movie.
Good decision.
Good decision, though. This is a better movie.
That one was definitely a good choice.
Apparently, the director is super temperamental.
I believe that.
Yeah. So, a ton of crew members decided to leave the project or they were fired. So, they had to, like, keep replacing everyone.
Oh, no.
Let's see. According to Tom Hardy, Leonardo DiCaprio bet that Hardy would get nominated for an Oscar for his role in the film, whereas Hardy thought otherwise. The wager was that the loser would be forced to get a tattoo of the winner's choice. It turned out that DiCaprio was right, and the choice of tattoo was hand-scribed Leo Knows All by DiCaprio.
That's really funny.
That's really good. That's really good.
Also, Leonardo DiCaprio was probably like, this has happened to me 87 million times. The supporting actor is going to win, and I'm going to get nothing.
I know how it goes.
I know how it goes. I've lost it plenty of times.
let's see. The film budget had ballooned from the original $60 million to $95 million. And by the time production wrapped, it had reached $135 million.
Yeah.
Because they had to move from Canada to Argentina, primarily. So the word, The Revenant, is actually rooted in a French verb called revenir, and it means spirits or ghosts or someone returning from the dead. So kind of like how he basically returns from the dead. He's almost near dead, and then he comes back. Because of revenge is the best medicine.
You know, that's what they say.
Let's let's see, Leonardo DiCaprio described the only time the shooting process got so extreme in which he tapped the director on the shoulder when the director was shooting a scene with glass and his son, their teeth chattering in a hailstorm, and the camera froze, and it was time to stop.
Leo was like, please, sir, I know I'm going to eat the raw bison. Please let me leave.
Sean Penn was the first choice for John Fitzgerald. I think he's a little too old.
I agree.
Leonardo DiCaprio's 6th Oscar nomination and first ever win.
Wow, let's hope he wins something else so this isn't it for him.
He should have gotten on his 5th time, in my opinion. I think The Aviator was great too. But I think that he deserved for Wolf of Wall Street, and I will die on that hill.
Was so good.
Because he is phenomenal, and if you haven't seen that movie, it's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Sorry, it was kind of funny, so...
Yeah, they don't like that. He won Best Actor at Golden Globes, because it was in the comedy section, but he didn't win because freaking Matthew McConaughey was in a freaking drama, and they're like, comedy, never heard of her.
Comedy, never heard of her. We don't give it to comedies. Anytime you, like, look up, like, comedies from the Oscars that have won, it's like... something that's, like, vaguely funny sometimes.
The director won Best Director.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Best Director. Half my crew quit.
In 2010, Christian Bale was attached to play Hugh Glass.
Mm.
With a different director.
That would have been interesting.
I know. Leonardo DiCaprio won 32 awards for this performance.
Why?
I just think that Wolf of Wall Street's better, guys.
I don't think this is even that good of a movie. Like, it just seemed like something you're supposed to like because it took a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seemed like they were like, it took a while. And you're like, supposed to like think that's impressive.
It's kind of like Boyhood.
Yeah.
I liked Boyhood. I don't think it was a bad movie.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that, like, I don't think that the fact that it took place over 7 years is like that impressive.
I know. But people are like... we have, because if you didn't, what was it all for?
Yeah, that's fair. It won Best Director, Best Cinematography, and Best Actor.
I have a sneeze.
Do it.
Oh, I sneezed a lot.
But okay. Yeah, so that's my trivia.
Here's my review. Well, not my review. I didn't write this. What do you give this, Jane? That's exactly what I'm going to give it as well.
It's fine.
It's fine, but it's definitely not that good.
It has some good qualities.
Yeah, but so do lots of movies.
It's true. Okay. Twilight has some good qualities.
I think we gave Twilight maybe a bigger score.
We gave Breaking Dawn Part 1 a bigger score. We gave that like an 8. 8,
yeah. Yeah. Some might say we have quite a taste. Okay. So this is 1 out of 10. Tedious study in ultra male macho ego with pretty nature cinematography.
The title says it all.
Yeah, literally. No, it doesn't. There's way more. I've grown weary of these I am man, therefore invincible movies. The cast of this film is all male, aside from one female thrown in so she can be raped. I know this film is based on a true story, a man who survived some sort of overwhelming circumstances. But really? All of this is true? Nevertheless, the film doesn't provide enough backstory, aside from visions of his wife/partner dying and other odd visions. I don't know who he is, the main character. I don't know who Tom Hardy is. Why is he such a jerk? Basically, there's no character development or backstory for anyone. The only moments I felt anything are when his son is being murdered by Tom Hardy and when the native woman is being raped. Otherwise, the film is a grueling series of violent, bordering on a ridiculous amount of situations that arise, circumstances, over and over and over again until the final bloody end. I need character development, some storyline, some reason to care about anyone. This movie, to me, has absolutely no soul, no moral compass. Is Leo's character a good guy because he's sad about his son and then saves a native woman from a nonstop rape? I guess that means he's a good guy. There are beautiful visuals of nature, nice cinematography. The bear scene is well done and feels so real even though the bear is CGI. Sort of real. Leo does a good job acting, grunting mostly, but this movie lacks soul, lacks characters, lacks everything except nonstop violence. I could have left this movie several times and come back to essentially the same scene for the entire duration of the film. Near dead man somehow enduring and soldiering onto his next near-death experience. I found this film dreadful, tiresome, and lazy storytelling. If this wins Best Picture, there is something wrong with our culture.
Well, it didn't, but it did win some pretty respectable awards.
Indeed. Indeed it did.
Wow.
I know.
Woof.
Woof. Just boring.
It's pretty boring. Yeah.
So boring. I was literally like, how am I going to watch this? It's so long.
And then you get hopeful, like about...
Yeah, like two-thirds
like
of the way
two-thirds
through.
Of the way through the movie, and then you're like, oh.
Oh, it did exactly what I thought it would do. It's like 2001 to me. 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
So boring. Being pretty is not enough.
It's true. Midsommar's pretty, but it has great character development. Yeah. It has amazing...
Hereditary is beautiful.
Hereditary is beautiful.
Tons of good, beautiful movies that are so boring. It's so right. I just don't care about Glass at all.
No, yeah. He's not, like, a character that you even see yourself any in at character, all. Because you just don't know anything about him.
I know. And it's like, any character you kind of care about is, like, barely in the movie.
Yeah. Like, Jim. I care about Jim.
I care about Jim. He's, like, barely in
it. I care about Hawk.
Yeah. He dies so early.
Yeah.
So boring. I also don't really even care about Hawk. When he died, I was like, I mean, that's unfortunate.
It was really sad when Hakuk, is that his name, died?
Yeah, that was sad when he died. Yeah, just boring. Boring, boring, boring. Stop making boring movies.
Yeah.
Under the guise of art. All right, guys.
All right. This is a short episode for a very long movie.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.